Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're tackling a really interesting patent law case out of the Federal Circuit, Woodland Trust v. Flower Tree Nursery. Now, on the surface, it's about, you know, how to protect plants from freezing using ice. But what makes this case so valuable for us is what it tells us about the kind of evidence you absolutely need when you're trying to argue that a patent shouldn't have been granted in the first place.
Exactly. For anyone looking to sharpen their legal instincts, especially, you know, when it comes to intellectual property, this case is just packed with lessons. It really boils down to this. In legal battles, the strength of your evidence matters just as much, maybe even more, than the story you're telling.
Right.
We're going to dig into why the Federal Circuit actually reversed a lower court's ruling here, and in doing so, sort of uncover some fundamental truths about what counts as persuasive proof in the world of patents.
Okay, so let's paint the picture. Woodland Trust had a patent for a method of spraying water on plants to create an insulating layer of ice, protecting them from frost. Simple enough, right?
Seems like it.
They sued Flower Tree Nursery, claiming Flower Tree was using a similar technique. Flower Tree's defense. They basically said, hold on, this isn't a new invention at all. They claimed that way back in the 60s and 70s, two guys named William Hawkins and Joseph Burke were already using this exact same ice-based plant protection.
And this is the crux of the matter. Flower Tree's entire argument hinged on the recollections of several witnesses who claimed to have seen Hawkins and Burke using this method decades, literally decades, before Woodland Trust ever filed for their patent. It's a classic case of alleging prior public use to invalidate a patent.
Right. And the district court, well, initially they bought Flower Tree's argument. They concluded that based on this eyewitness testimony about this alleged prior use, the patent was invalid. It sounds pretty straightforward. People testified, so it must be true, right?
Yeah. Well, not quite. And this is where the Federal Circuit took a different view and ultimately reversed the lower court. The critical point to understand here is the legal standard required to prove a patent invalid. It's not enough to just present some evidence. The law demands clear and convincing evidence.
Clear and convincing. That definitely sounds like a step up. What does that practically mean in a courtroom setting? Is it like beyond a reasonable doubt?
No, not quite that high. That's for criminal cases. But it is a significantly higher bar than the more familiar preponderance of the evidence standard, which basically just means more likely than not, you know, 50.1%.
Okay.
Clear and convincing evidence means the evidence has to be strong enough to produce in the mind of the judge or jury a firm belief or conviction as to the truth of the claims being made. In patent law, there's a presumption that a granted patent is valid, so anyone trying to invalidate it has a, well, a substantial evidentiary mountain to climb. Think of it like this. You need evidence that doesn't just tip the scales slightly. It needs to make them feel pretty darn certain.
Okay, so let's unpack why the Federal Circuit wasn't convinced here. Flower Tree put forward these witnesses who swore they saw Hawkins and Burke using this ice method way back when. Why wasn't that enough to meet this clear and convincing standard?
Well, the Federal Circuit expressed a, let's say, significant degree of skepticism towards relying solely on this kind of oral testimony, particularly given two key things. One, the witnesses had connections to Flower Tree. And two, they were recalling events from a very, very long time ago. We're talking about memories stretching back decades.
Yeah, that's a long time.
Right. The court emphasized the inherent unreliability of memory over such long periods, especially when those memories might be influenced, consciously or not, by personal interests or just the passage of time itself. What might seem like a clear recollection could, in reality, be a composite of fragmented memories or maybe even some wishful thinking.
So it wasn't just about whether the witnesses seemed credible in the moment. There's a more fundamental legal principle about the type of evidence needed.
Precisely. That fundamental principle is the need for corroboration. The Federal Circuit stressed that when you're trying to prove something like prior public use based on someone's memory of events from years ago, you just can't rely on their word alone.
Okay.
You need independent, supporting evidence to back up their claims. Think about it like if you tried to prove you were at a specific concert 10 years ago, your memory might be hazy, right?
Sure.
But maybe a ticket stub with a date and venue or a photo you posted online back then or even a credit card statement showing you bought something at the venue that would be corroborating evidence.
That makes perfect sense. So what kind of tangible evidence would the Federal Circuit have been looking for in the Flower Tree case? Like what would have counted?
Good question. They would have looked for things like dated documents describing the method. maybe photographs or even video footage clearly showing the system in operation during the 1960s or 70s. Sales receipts for specific equipment used in the process could work.
Like pumps or sprinklers.
Exactly. Or maintenance logs detailing its use over a sustained period. Maybe even testimony from truly independent third parties who had absolutely no connection to Flower Tree or Hawkins.
Gotcha.
In the Flower Tree case, this is where their argument really, really fell short.
Because they didn't have that kind of backup, just the witness testimony and weren't there some photos?
Exactly. They presented the testimony of four witnesses, and as we mentioned, all of them had ties to Flower Tree. They were either family members of Hawkins or his employees. So potential bias right there.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, they also offered two blurry, undated photographs that the court found to be essentially useless. They couldn't definitively prove the prior use of the specific invention claimed in the patent. There were no invoices for specialized equipment, no business records indicating, you know, consistent use of such a system over a 10-year period, no independent verification whatsoever, just recollections. Recollections from individuals with a vested interest in the outcome.
Wow. So it's almost like the court was saying, look, we appreciate your story, but we need something more solid than just your word, especially given the time that has passed and, frankly, who's telling it.
That's a very accurate way to put it. And this idea, this caution about uncorroborated recollections in patent disputes isn't some new development. It's not like the Federal Circuit just invented this.
Aww.
No, they actually referred back to a landmark Supreme Court case from way back in 1892. It's called the barbed wire patent case.
1892. Wow.
Yeah. And what's so interesting here is how this really old case highlights this longstanding judicial concern about claims of prior invention or use that are based only on someone's memory. Back then, just like in Flower Tree, the Supreme Court was wary of individuals popping up and claiming they had invented something before someone else, especially without concrete proof to back it up. It shows this isn't just a modern legal nuance. It's a principle with really deep historical roots.
So this skepticism towards uncorroborated oral testimony has been a consistent thread in patent law for, well, over a century then.
Absolutely. And makes perfect sense when you think about it, right? Consider the potential for bias and just the inherent fallibility of human memory.
Totally.
As the Federal Circuit specifically pointed out in the Flower Tree opinion, the witnesses all had a clear reason to favor Flower Tree's position in the lawsuit. Their family or employment ties to Hawkins created a potential for their recollections to be subconsciously or maybe even consciously shaped to support Flower Tree's claim.
And what about the timing? Didn't they say this alleged prior use stopped in the late 1970s, but then Hawkins rebuilt a similar system around 1988, which was right when the patent came out? That seems convenient.
It certainly did raise eyebrows for the court. That timing appeared suspicious, and it further weakened the credibility of the uncorroborated testimony. It sort of suggested that maybe the prior use was sporadic or experimental, or maybe just discontinued and forgotten until, oops, the patent came into existence. The court explicitly mentioned the frailty of memory over such a long period and the natural temptation to remember facts in a way that aligns with one's current interests in a legal dispute. You know, it's a normal human tendency, but the legal system, especially when dealing with established property rights, like patents, just requires more robust and objective proof.
This all makes logical sense from a legal perspective, definitely. But what are the broader implications here? Why does the specific type of evidence needed to invalidate a patent matter so much in the, you know, grand scheme of things?
Well, think about it. If patents could be easily overturned based on weak or unsubstantiated evidence, like shaky memories from decades ago, it would severely undermine the entire patent system.
How so?
The system is designed to encourage and protect innovation, right? Patents grant inventors exclusive rights for a period, incentivizing them to invest time, resources, effort into creating new and useful stuff. If those rights could be casually dismissed based on vague memories and, frankly, self-serving testimony of interested parties decades later, well, it would create a climate of uncertainty. It would discourage investment in R&D.
Yeah, I can see that. Why bother investing if someone can just come along later and say, oh yeah, my uncle did that in the 70s?
Exactly. The Federal Circuit's decision in Flower Tree reflects a fundamental policy choice to safeguard patent holders from what they essentially call dubious challenges. They want to ensure that when a patent is invalidated, it's based on solid, reliable proof that truly demonstrates the invention wasn't actually new.
Okay, so for any law students tuning in, this seems really important. What are the crucial lessons to take away from this deep dive into Woodland Trust v. Flower Tree Nursery? What are the key principles they should really commit to memory?
Okay, several critical takeaways. First, and probably most importantly, understand the absolute necessity of corroborating evidence when you are attempting to challenge the validity of a patent based on prior use or knowledge. Remember, oral testimony alone, especially concerning events from the distant past, will likely face significant skepticism from the courts. It's just not enough.
Got it. Corroboration is king.
Pretty much. Second, always critically assess potential witness bias. The closer the witness is to the party they are testifying for, family, employee, business partner, the more carefully their testimony will be scrutinized. It doesn't mean they're lying, but the court will consider that connection.
Makes sense. What else?
Third, recognize the impact of the passage of time on memory. The legal system is very aware of this fallibility. Relying solely on recollections from decades ago without any supporting documentation is just a very weak legal strategy. You need something tangible.
Right.
Fourth, firmly grasp that higher, clear, and convincing evidence standard required to prove patent invalidity. It's a substantial hurdle. It demands truly compelling proof, not just a maybe.
Okay.
And finally, maybe a point for aspiring inventors themselves listening. This case underscores the vital strategic importance of meticulously and crucially contemporaneously documenting your entire research and development process from the very beginning. Keep lab notebooks, dated records, emails, prototypes.
Build your own corroboration from day one.
Exactly. You never know when that documentation might be absolutely essential to defend your intellectual property rights down the line.
So, to recap the core principle in a nutshell, if you want to argue that a patent is invalid because someone else was already doing it, particularly if you're basing that argument on what people remember from many years ago, you need more than just their say-so. You need the hard evidence, the dated records, the photographs with context, the independent proof. Corroboration is absolutely paramount.
Precisely. It's simply not enough to have a plausible story. You must possess verifiable proof that can withstand serious legal scrutiny, especially when you're attempting to dismantle a legally granted property right like a patent. Well, this has been a truly insightful deep dive into the crucial role of evidentiary standards in patent law. It really highlights the legal system's careful consideration of memory, potential bias, and the fundamental need for reliable proof when challenging intellectual property rights.
It's a fascinating intersection of law, memory, and policy.
Definitely. On that note, here's a final thought for you, our listeners, to consider. In our increasingly digital age, where just vast amounts of information are now created and stored electronically, what forms of digital evidence do you think are emerging as the new gold standard for corroborating claims of prior invention or use in patent law?
Interesting question.
And maybe what novel challenges might arise in terms of authenticating, preserving, and interpreting these digital records from the past in the context of intellectual property disputes. Think about emails, digital lab notes, source code repositories.
Yeah, metadata, timestamps, potential for alteration.
Yeah.
It opens a whole new set of issues.
Exactly. It's definitely something to contemplate as the landscape of evidence continues to evolve in this really critical area of law. Thanks for joining us on the Deep Dive.